The theater. Sing out, Louise!
Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater.
Dudes, friends, lovers,
yes.
Individuals.
Uh-huh.
That's me.
Cherished one. It is you.
That's me.
It's so you. You don't even know. Hi, friends.
Hey, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing all right. I'm sleepy. I had a long day with my
baby. Well, you got a baby or day. Something?
No, it was a good day with baby.
Yeah.
Day with baby.
With Grogu. Yeah.
Yes.
It was a solid day, but now I'm sleepsy, and then I have a rehearsal after this, so it's fine. But it's good to see your faces. It is good to
life
see
life in the theater. Life in the theater.
Yeah.
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 Too bad there's anything... no like theater exercises or something that could get your energy up, like, you know.
No, shake. I don't do that.
Zip, I don't do that. Zip, zap, zap.
Well, I'm in the middle of writing a podcast warm-up exercise book.
Ooh. Are you?
It's all just theater shit. You do it on screen.
You do it in front. That would sell, actually.
Probably. Yeah.
Now you could definitely. Yeah.
I'm ready.
It's a hot market. Get on it.
In this day and age, in this economy.
You got to get it where you can get it.
Jay, I just have to shout out that you have a Dracula Dead and Loving It poster behind you.
Classic.
Yes.
Classic.
That's next to our Grindhouse poster.
Yeah, next to our Grindhouse poster, who also raised me. So, Dracula Dead and Loving It is my mom, and Grindhouse is my dad. So,
mom, Leslie.
My parents here.
Wow. Yeah. Aw, that's lovely. Hey.
I was raised by wolves. Hi.
Shout out to Pasadena Playhouse. Uh-huh. They are now Tony Award-winning Pasadena Playhouse.
That's true. They won a regional Tony Award for their last season.
Yeah.
You did that, right, baby?
I was the general manager, so technically it's also my Tony.
Yeah.
You should go to New York and get that fucking Tony, don't
we? Officially, Tony Award-winning podcast here.
Hell, Tony!
To be clear, I don't. You know, in case listeners don't know, I did leave the Playhouse in November of 2022. We won the Tony for the season I was there, so I do, you know, I feel some pride in that in some ways. But also, I left for, like, really specific reasons, and... there was not only the fact that I had a child coming and the job was a 24/7 job that was kicking my butt, but also because there's toxicity there, just like there is in every regional theater, I would argue, probably. Mm-hmm.
Probably.
And I'm not saying it's okay, but I am saying that it's something that they're all trying to work on and trying to fix. I don't know that the Playhouse is yet, but they will be soon. but they've been written up in LA Times about it. They know. But I love you guys.
Yeah.
And love that we do this podcast.
Yes.
And I will take that Tony and put it on my resume for the rest of my life.
Absolutely.
Fuck yes.
Yeah, I do have my feelings about the place, but that's okay.
Sure, of course. Yeah, of course you do.
That's another podcast. Should we do
it? Took four seasons, but we're finally that close to a Tony.
Yeah.
Congratulations on your Anthony Award.
Mm-hmm. Well, we won a Peabody for our Grease Live Award. Is that, or was it clowning? I think it was clowning. A Peabody.
A Peabody.
You won a Peabody.
A Peabody.
Like peanut butter and jelly.
That's right. You know...
I love you back.
I really kind of needed today.
Yeah,
like, today
I'm giggly.
Was just
we're
a
giggly.
Slog, man.
Yes.
It was just a mental slog.
We're giggly caliente today, and I'm happy about
it.
Giggly caliente.
Yeah, welcome, everyone. Welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds, made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm Jay Bailey Bertram.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
And each week we get together to discuss and debate the definition of theater through various lenses. And this week, we are five theater makers from the LA theater scene.
Sure,
because we have back our dear friends, past and future guests, Jay and Natalie. Jay Dutcher, hi. Say a little something so people can hear your voice so they can put the voice with the name.
No.
Yeah.
She's known for her
patented no improv, everybody. Yeah.
She's known for her petulance. The art of petulant improv by Jay Dutcher.
I'll give you nothing. That's a promise. Yeah.
just somebody throwing the ball at you and you just let it hit you and drop to the ground.
Ow! You threw a ball at me.
Yeah, Jay Dutcher is in fact a character from Peanuts.
With that hat? Yeah. That hat's character. Pretty great. Yeah.
Y'all can't see this, but...
And also a director and phenomenal... Yeah. Person and stage manager, you've done a lot of fantastic stage managing.
Amazing stage manager. Just a great I've seen her handle some person. Very big personalities.
Woo!
And by big, you mean shitty. Yeah.
I mean me. She handled me. Oh,
I'm not shitty. The biggest personality in the room. No,
yeah, I'm the worst. Yeah. Worst.
Yeah, I'm a wearer of many hats.
Including that one that you're
wearing. Bit of a maverick, really.
And we also have. Natalie Nicole Dressel.
Oh, hello. Hi.
One of our oldest friends on this podcast. You were on our first season.
Yeah.
Yes, I am the mogul who was here in for Vogel.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Never Natalie, stops. It
Natalie,
never
we're
stops.
Gonna have to
end the podcast now. That was
Natalie, you gotta go. You gotta go now.
that will be really funny when I'm a mogul someday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Will it be funny?
Well, nope.
Then?
No, yeah. It won't. I, but you know what? I could pay someone to laugh.
Yeah. Maybe then we'll get more subscribers.
She's going to be laughing all the way to the bank.
I mean, it's a pretty good rhyme. I mean, what rhyme? What else rhymes with Vogel?
Vogel? It's a wine.
What was that?
That's a
very nice.
I'll
Would
shut
you
up
drink
now.
Some Gogol with Vogel?
I absolutely would.
Yeah.
Vogel with Vogel.
Yeah.
Bailey. Hi, Bailey.
Bailey's
I'm
just
about
like,
to hit the self-destruct button.
It's just off the side.
No, we're having
rails.
Fun.
But he's
we're
looking at the subscriber number just dropping.
we're full of beans, and I hate beans.
I hate beans, too.
We hate
Foolish.
Beans.
I'm the only bean representer of this regular trio on the podcast. And
I'll eat a little bag of sand from time to time.
Or
thank
you, know,
you.
Sandy poop is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
gross.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
One time, I heard if you eat enough sand that you poop glass actually because your body turns it into glass.
That's a tremendous amount of heat.
Yeah.
My bowels run at 7,000 degrees Celsius.
This week is a Scott's pick. Scott!
Yeah.
What'd you pick?
Well, this is kind of a part two. Earlier this year, we did The Talking Heads, Stop Making Sense. Mm-hmm, 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 perhaps mm-hmm. one of the greatest concert films ever made.
Agreed.
And this is the follow-up, which is David Byrne's American Utopia, which was filmed and shown, I think it debuted at Toronto Film Festival. Yeah. And then was on HBO, and it was on during lockdown. And so I watched it several times. But I think it's also, we'd like to talk about evolution. We like to talk about the definition of theater and to go from Stop Making Sense, which is a rock band performing and it's brilliantly filmed and it's a brilliant performance, to the spearhead of that band taking us to a different level in a different way, in a very theatrical way. Just seemed like a no-brainer. Plus,
and on Broadway, no less.
And on Broadway. And Natalie and... Yes. Natalie and Jay and I had talked a lot about it during lockdown and right after. And then Bailey and I had been Stop Making Sense fans. And then since CJ drove up playing Talking Heads last night when we were on the sidewalk.
Yeah. Driving
up in her car.
For sure.
Yeah.
What
no.
What song was it?
Oh, God. What was it? It was.
Was it Life During Wartime?
Yeah. I really. That's one of my favorites on Stop Making Sense.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was why I picked it, and that's why we're going to talk about it a little bit more. about David Byrne and some talking heads and some music and performance.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. And I want to talk Spike Lee as much as possible.
Oh, yes.
Of course.
While we're here.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, let's give some context with American Utopia specifically. So we're in the lockdown. Did you all watch it right away? Did you? Because it premiered in the lockdown. I assume Toronto Film Fest 2020 September had to have been like a Zoom version of the festival or something, right?
Yeah.
How did they do that? I don't even know.
I don't know. But it debuted there. I think they may have had like isolated, like spaced out screenings where you had like 10 critics in a theater spread out.
Here we go. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic in Toronto, the festival took place primarily on an online streaming platform, although limited in-person screenings still took place within the constraints of social distancing restrictions. Yeah, so you're right. Yeah. So, like, people were spread out seeing stuff, but this was shown in both formats.
Right. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool.
Shall we do a little Scottopedia and just drop the general what's going on, or do we want to go around and talk about all of our context?
I was thinking context, but we can let's go for Scottopedia first. Let's just okay. Let's hear about him.
I'm sorry, I stepped on that. I felt like I stepped on that.
It's okay.
It's your week, buddy.
Scottopedia, you go ahead and Scottopedia.
We're here to support a pedia.
Yeah, we support Apedia the heck out of you.
Scottpedia.
American Utopia is a 2020 American concert film directed and produced by Spike Lee from a screenplay by David Byrne. The film is a live recording of a Broadway performance of the show adapted from the touring show that supported the album of the same name.
Huh?
Yeah, that's a mouthful. The film features selections from that album, as well as songs from throughout Byrne's career. Byrne performed alongside 11 musicians, all of whom used wireless and portable equipment, and frequent collaborator Annie B. Larson served as choreographer. And just quick digression, because she didn't come up while we were doing Stop Making Sense, obviously, but just YouTube some Annie B. Parsons stuff, because...
Yeah.
She's really cool, and it's a cool collaboration.
You might have said this, Scott, and I missed it, but this was the opening film of the 2020 Toronto Film Fest.
Oh, really?
Oh, I didn't know it was the opening one, but I knew that it was there. Yeah.
And you want to know what won the People's Choice Award, the Audience Award?
Yes, please.
Chloe Zhao's Nomadland, which would later go on to win
the Academy Award
for Best Picture.
Best Picture.
All right,
and I'm no mad about that.
Director, not Best Picture. Did it win Best Picture?
I don't think it won Best Picture.
It won Best Director is what I meant.
Oh.
Right? It didn't win Best Picture.
No, I don't think it won.
I think you're wrong. I should know that. Okay, keep going.
No, that's all I got. It was just a little brief one, but I thought it'd be a good segue to set up all of our contexts for American Utopia and David Byrne and Talking Heads.
And that was basically my breakdown, so thanks a fucking lot, Scott.
Oh, ouch.
Well, I think we should still hear it.
Okay.
We're witnessing a different kind of breakdown.
We're loose today, folks. Everything's a little loose and sloppy today. I like it. Loose and sloppy.
CJ's breakdown.
Go ahead, CJ.
A concert film directed by Spike Lee, featuring David Byrne and a cast of musicians and performers from around the world. Mm-hmm. Songs are from the album of the same name, other Talking Heads album, and one additional by Janelle Monáe.
Gotcha. Wow. I was kind of hoping for a CJ breakdown, like where you like describe like sort of the plot of it based on your...
Also, David Byrne still has great hair. How's that?
Oh.
He does, yeah.
That's absolutely. The in-depth analysis I'm looking for. Thank you. It's like my grandma only voted for Clinton because he had a good head of hair.
Really?
Yeah, like you'd ask her about politics and she'd be like, well, I just like anybody with a good head of hair. And you'd be like, well, who'd you vote for in the last, you know, whatever? Clinton, he's got a good head of hair. Well, how do you feel about, you know, everything that's going on with the, you know, and Monica Lewinsky and all that, you know, how do you feel about that? Well, he's got a good set of hair, so it makes sense.
Like, what sitcom was it that so-and-so was going to vote for Bush, and then he ended up shaking his hand, and he had a
King
weak handshake?
Hill.
Was it King of the Hill?
Yeah.
And then he couldn't vote for Bush anymore?
Yeah.
Well, he did. Eventually, he did vote for Bush.
Right. And then now we're here.
Yeah, here
this
we are.
America,
thanks.
This American
the perfect
utopia.
Country.
Yeah,
it's utopian. Which is what this is all about. What's your context with it, y'all? So let's actually, Siege, start with, like, did you watch it the first time with us?
I watched it the first time with
That's
y'all. I was never a Talking Heads person,
right,
missed
right.
that. So we did Stop Making Sense in American Utopia in one night, and
yeah.
I bought both albums absolutely fucking immediately. And I just rewatched this again. I actually used a little bit of it for choreography in the last couple months. So, like,
nice.
I'm a convert. I love David Byrne. I love the Talking Heads. And I love this movie as well.
Yeah.
And then
the music is ripe for choreography.
Yeah.
Sure. It is.
It's, so, you know, it's a big part of the movie or the performance, too.
Yep.
Yeah. All those Latin and African rhythms that he started bringing in and using. Yeah, absolutely.
For as effective as the choreography was, it was so simplistic. Like, there was kind of like a beautiful simplicity to a lot of it. It wasn't overly complicated, which not only was great for the story, but was the type of choreography an old man at David Byrne's age could still do.
Yeah.
And look
I
cool
like
doing.
Find
and
that
look
middle
cool
ground.
Doing. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. No, absolutely. He's still so dynamic. He's still so physically interesting. I mean, he was just sort of built for performance.
Yeah.
Great head of
yeah.
hair.
Great head
of
hair.
Scott,
yeah.
what was your experience watching this for the first time?
So I don't think we watched it like immediately, but it was more on our roommate Ian's radar than it was on our radar. And so like it was one of those things where, hey, come over tonight, we'll watch it. And like, you know, it's David Byrne, but you like Talking Heads or whatever. And I was like, oh, well, I'll have the Switch. We'll see if I pay attention. And the first song happened, and it's that one where he's like holding the brain, and it's like
yeah.
a here. And like the Switch went down, and I just never picked it back up again. And it was just one of those experiences where, like, after every song, we were all like, wow.
Yeah.
But whoa. Like we kept looking at each other during this and going, like, is this just me, or is this like blowing my mind right now?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it got better and better. And the more I learned about it, the more I liked it. There's that non-binary, I believe, gender fluid performer that's a part of it. And I heard a story that they were talking to Spike Lee, and they're like, oh, maybe I'll tone my makeup down or whatever, so I can blend in more with the general vibe of the cast, because they all were kind of wearing the same outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And Spike Lee was like, no, absolutely not. Wear your makeup. We want to celebrate that part of you, like, wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And so, like, the representation there is just, like, joyful and, like, unabashed, and it doesn't seem, like, tokeny. It just seems like they're there because they're an amazing performer, and they're celebrating the people all of them are individually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's really interesting how they're able to do, like, you just look at the context of the show. You just look at the show and you're like, this is a vision of utopia. And it's not like there's a lot of things there, you know? It's not a utopia filled with things. It's just a utopia filled with art and people. And it doesn't need the things. That's what I like about it. That's when you talk about it being utopian and having everybody around.
Mm-hmm.
It has this equity or this equitable feeling to it. Like,
yeah.
Everybody's there.
Absolutely. And Jay, did you watch it the same time as Natalie?
Yes, I watched it the same time as Natalie. I think I talked about this the last time I was on, but I was not like a huge Talking Heads fan either. My dad had never really talked about them, and we were he was my like music influence. Mm-hmm. But we watched Stop Making Sense, and then we watched American Utopia. Well, actually, I think we watched American Utopia first.
Yeah, that's what got us interested enough. And then Ian's like, well, shoot, have you seen Stop Making Sense? And then got us into that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's
masterpiece.
Just, yeah, really, really compelling, beautiful work. And it just brings so many emotions in me. And that's just the work itself, like the stage show. Then you have this whole other element of the filming of it. Not just the archive, because there's archival, you know, footage that most companies, if not all, do. They archive their shows. But this is a whole other thing. This is a film of a live performance. And I think that he does a really good job of figuring out what that is. And it's honestly something that I've been thinking a lot about recently, about turning live performances into film, for a lot of reasons. First of which is it's way more accessible. That's something that we thought about during the pandemic. It's accessible money-wise and like going places-wise. It's just something that hasn't been thought of before the pandemic. So it's awesome. And I'm excited to see more places doing it. I hope they do it more.
You know, we're covering all the NBC live musical things that they've done. Like they did Grease Live is the most recent one we did. And something I keep thinking about is like none of them really are good theater or good film.
Right.
Like neither really captures the essence of either thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, I think about this a lot as an artist, and I think that's what I think a lot of us are like wanting is like, how do you capture theater on film? How do you make theater that accessible for people? Because it's so difficult. And things like concert films are way easier to do. And we've, you know, when you have Jonathan Demme or Spike Lee directing, they have their film essence behind it that is guides it, and you do get that film essence. And here I think we do get film essence and theater essence. That's why I'm bringing this up. But I don't think we've seen that yet with the NBC live musicals. I don't think we saw that with Hamilton. I don't think that's well shot, because there's so many times during Hamilton where you're like, there's choreography happening and I can't see it. Why can't I see it? I want to see it. You're just focusing in on Lin-Manuel Miranda right now. I don't care.
Well, and
show other people.
Rewatching it this second time around too, I noticed too, they do so many overhead shots and you can see the formations on the ground and you can see the choreography was built for watching it overhead as well, which is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Scott, go ahead.
I was just going to say that one of the unique things about it is that Spike is dialed into everything he's doing is in service of the show as a whole. And I don't mean just capturing that. And I think that's what Hamilton tried to do was capture it. He's trying to be in it. He's trying to, so you get both perspectives. You get an audience perspective of watching it, but then he does those cool behind the scenes. And like CJ said, those overhead shots that make you like ponder the thing, which all serves a lot of the themes that the show is about. I think. I'm sorry, Bales. What was your question?
Just wanted to know when you watched it and I don't know when you watched it for the first time.
Yeah, it was during lockdown, and you know, just going through the streaming services and going, "What's next? What's next? What's next? Give me put stuff in my brain." And then Brian Krasner, roommate, friend of the pod, and I sat down one night and maybe imbibed in some marijuana and just watched it. What? And just went like, holy shit. And it had been a little while, maybe a year or two since I'd last watched Stop Making Sense. And I was just knocked out by it. I was knocked out by his evolution as an artist. You have the Talking Heads songs in there, but then you have his original songs and solo songs, and then you have the Janelle Monáe cover and that sort of thing. That just and then that cast of singer, dancer, musicians that are just in it the whole time. It just dumbfounded me. What about you, Bales? You didn't see it till fairly recently, right?
I watched it with y'all. That was,
That was your first time.
Cool. Yeah.
I'm not a Talking Heads fan. I'm a Jonathan Demme fan. That's why I like Stop Making Sense. I like them. I'm not saying I'm not a fan, but I said this on the last episode. Is sort of like, I like their music a great deal. I came to Stop Making Sense because of Jonathan Demme. And stayed for Talking Heads, you know?
Yeah.
And this is sort of similar where I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I should watch that other one. And then you guys, when we all decided we were going to watch it, I was like, oh, yeah, I still haven't ever watched that. I need to do that. So, but it was fun. It was so fun to watch. And it was a while ago that we watched it because we did a double feature with Stop Making Sense. So I had to look up some of the video again and like scrub through it and watch a few things again to kind of remind myself. But yeah, I like this one more as a concert. As a musical theater experience, as a theater experience. Mm-hmm, I like Stop Making Sense better as a concert film.
For sure.
That's what
I meant.
Yeah,
they're two distinct things, and I think that's the cool evolution part, that he's at this point. I watched an interview with him. I think it was The Tonight Show, but it was a good interview, despite it being, what's his name? And he talked about, like, he innately has always understood theater and performance, but not necessarily the lingo or the technical jargon.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea, like he said, he was a little freaked out at first about the idea of learning lines, learning when to say words in the middle of this performance, and then how to react to that if it got an audience reaction. And if you got to react, you know, a laugh one night, but not the next. And do you lean into that? How do you, you know? So he was learning that, but I think he innately figured it out really quickly because even just from the beginning, like he holds a stage so well. He's just one of those humans that is gifted like that. And then to watch everything that's built around him and constructed around him to make it a truly theatrical experience. Like it's and great audiences, and I don't know how, if they just did this in one night or if it was two nights or how much they filmed of it. I couldn't find a lot of details about the Broadway show. I found a lot about the album and the film, but not so much about the show, other than they wanted to keep going, but COVID slowed them down. And then I guess he's talking about doing another tour of it in the next year or so.
Oh, I would go see that live so hard.
Heck yeah.
I want to talk about the chains. The entire background of the set was chains, and in the midst of the first song, or I think before the first song goes, the chains like slowly rise.
Mm-hmm.
But beforehand, they were just like these like piles on the ground that you, as an audience, wouldn't maybe necessarily even know what's going on with that. And then as they slowly like, they're constantly shaking and shimmering, which really works when he does the "I should watch TV" moment, and he gets
which is one of my favorite numbers.
And the moment when they take them completely away, and you're just seeing the bare stone back of the theater, and then they play with shadows.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought that was a direct homage to Demme and Stop Making Sense.
I thought there was a lot of homages to Stop Making Sense in this.
That number is actually one of my favorites. I think that's Blind with the Shadows.
Yes.
My favorite numbers because I don't know. I mean, doesn't matter if this isn't his intention or not, but the way that I always read it is it's an homage to the cave, like Plato's The Cave thing too, because it's this called Blind.
Yes.
And I just make those connections, and the shadow stuff is just so great, how it just towers, their shadows tower over them. Mm-hmm. And the way that they use scale in that song is so, so cool. I love shadow work in shows.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, we did some real cool stuff yesterday. we had an intense discussion here one night about whether or not everybody is actually barefoot, and there are definitely some, like most
of them
are barefoot, which means that you know those stagehands are like sweeping and mopping that thing like crazy during their runs if they're on their barefoot. But there's one or two dancers who have like flesh colored webby toe.
Yeah, rubber yeah. They go on thing. The bottom of your the ball of your foot so you don't rip your foot open.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, performing on your feet, dancing on your feet barefoot is like I've heard from people who dance that it's like murder on your feet. It's
horrible. I mean, you got of course it is no supports.
But that's how, as a dancer, as a choreographer, that's how I prefer to perform. I looked it up last night as I was rewatching it. The whole idea was that he wanted everyone to be barefoot because they were in these formal matching suits the whole time. But he said everyone was encouraged. Everyone had their own special pair of flip-flops or sandals that they got to pick themselves, that they would wear to the edge of the stage and then take them off and then walk on barefoot to perform.
It's like that's treating cool. the stage as if it's like a sacred space.
Yeah, I nerded out a bunch over some religious and ritualistic stuff in the show quite a bit.
Like what?
Well, I'm sure we were going to talk about it eventually. The Janelle Monáe cover, Hell You Tambout, which is it's a memoriam to several of the people that have died at the hands of police, African-Americans that have died at the hands of police. And it's a very powerful song where it's just a call and response. The cast is calling out the name of people. Then they're saying, say his name, and they say it three times each, and they encourage the audience to follow along. Mm-hmm. And it's a cool song in and of itself. I remember when we were watching it, we had been gabbing and laughing and just being buddies through the whole evening, but that song came on and we were quiet through the entire number. Mm-hmm. The entire room was silent.
I mean, it's ripping. And then the cutting to the images and the, right. and the faces.
But it's just really important to witness that.
Sure.
And but I really applaud David Byrne for making it and exposing it for more people to witness it.
But it's just the whole idea. I mean, it literally is ritual. It literally is magic. The idea of repeating something and then saying it in unison. And then the more people that are saying it with you, the more powerful the word or the name is. And I just was fucking nerding out during that song. Mm. Also emoting and feeling energized and sad. Like it did magic to me as a person. Like it made me feel a lot of different fucking things. And
that's what's so great about art and performance, is it can make you feel all those complicated things. And there is a ritual about it that lets you tear down your walls a little easier and lets it get in and lets you wear your emotions on your sleeve. And for stuff like that, that's very important because it unifies us. Everybody in that theater, if they allowed their walls to come down, like walked away changed.
Oh yeah.
Right.
And
right.
That's so cool. I love art that changes me. I've made a decision that art has to change me to get 5 stars. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to walk out of
that's
bed.
That's a good. It's a good standard.
A different person.
You're right anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time we go to a Marvel movie, Jay's all like, "Meh."
I'm still the same person walking out I was walking in. Yeah.
I don't think the purposes of those movies are to get 5 stars from you, but maybe.
You know what? That's fine. Then I don't need them.
Okay. All right.
Bailey and Scott, this will make the both of you scream, but I have to admit, this show also made me think of something that we all saw last year together was Crude.
Oh my God.
The thing that reminded me of it was, particularly in this recording,
people who don't know, was a Motley Crue show that couldn't use the name Motley Crue. So it was just
when we were standing in line for Crude, it was sold out, and 75% of the people in that line were your uncle. And like, that was what I kind of, like, there was, there's one guy in the front row of American Utopia that you keep seeing because how can you not? Because he's a big, tall, wide guy and he has a big old long beard. And yeah. I was like, I would bet that guy doesn't go to theater very often, which means American Utopia is a little bit like Pete Buttigieg, because it's bringing people to theater that wouldn't normally go to theater because they were Talking Heads fans. And that's fucking cool as shit.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's kind of been his journey, David Byrne's journey. And, you know, there's been criticisms of him being an asshole during Talking Heads. But one of the reasons he left was because he needed to go do music that caused him to have love. That's how he said it, caused him to have love. And he was like, I just wasn't doing that anymore. And that's when he starts getting into Latin and South American and African rhythms and song and music. And it's just interesting because I think that, and this is something I felt from the first watch of it during lockdown, was that it's very much a show about connection, as opposed to being isolated. And I think that he was a person, and this is also based on his speculative Asperger's, he was a person that felt very isolated for a long time and evolved past that and saw that he had the potential to use his stuff to connect people and to connect himself with people. But, you know, he said one of the most awkward phone calls he made was to Janelle Monáe going, hey, I really want to do this song and I don't know, I need your permission.
Not to mention he has Janelle Monáe's fucking phone number.
Right. Right.
Which, if you haven't seen the Lipstick Lover music video that Janelle Monáe just dropped, do yourself a favor.
Ooh, you will be horny. Yeah. You will be horny.
Yeah. Their music always makes me horny.
Oh my God, it is smoking. Yeah, it is pretty great.
To that point you were talking about, Scott, because I was thinking about this when we were talking about how uncomfortable he was learning lines for this show. And the times when he is interacting with the audience and has to stop and sort of wait with the audience, and there's moments where they sort of, they respond to him, like when he's talking about the voting and somebody's like, hey, I'm the same age you just said, and he has to sort of improvise. There's really nice moments there. And I don't know if I'm projecting, but it reminds me of me when I'm in a social situation and somebody does something I didn't expect. And it really endears me to him because it's clear that it is about connection. So he's stepping out of his comfort zone with the awkwardness. You know, he's making the call to Janelle Monáe, even though it was one of the most awkward conversations he's ever had. Connection doesn't have to be not awkward. Like, that's
right. That's absolutely.
Cool. Yeah, that's what's so, like, affirming to me watching it, is I see so much of myself in that, and also am encouraged to continue my own utopia by connecting with other people. Like, there's hope. There's hope for people like me. It's very inspiring.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I want to just go off for a minute.
go off.
Okay. So I love, like, some of his songs seem like reminders to him about, like, how to be chiller. Like, there's that song where it's like, and you can come to my building and I'll put down what I'm doing. My friends are important. Like, it's just like,
yeah.
I'm like, okay, someone's trying to learn here.
Yeah.
And one of the most beautiful lines I think maybe I've heard in a really long time is from that Every Day is a Miracle. Toward the end, he's talking about what it feels like to be in love with somebody, and when that feeling is big, and he says to feel like a cockroach in the cosmos of your house. It's just like,
wow.
That is so beautiful. And then the other thing is, it's a really sort of a final, like, personal note. One of the movies that was really important to me growing up, that I had, like, taped off VHS off HBO, was Little Monsters.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, both the Savage Boys, Howie Mandel.
Yes.
the end of the story is like, under your bed is the world where the monsters live, and some of them are cool. And but the longer you spend on there, you might turn into a monster. But you can like travel all the world through this world and come up under other people's beds. So somehow in the course of the climax of the film, the way home was cut off. So they went out through a place and ended up on like the Pacific Ocean beach. And wow. They called home to his dad, Daniel Stern, who was like a pissed off dad. And he's like, yeah, we're in California. You're going to have to come and get us. And they're all just like having fun on the beach while they're waiting to get picked up. And they start playing Road to Nowhere. It was the first time I'd ever heard it. And like, honestly, that song stuck with me more than the movie. But like, there's something in that song where it's like seeing them and feeling that moment that something in young me knew that I would be going to California someday. And that was like resonating so hard in me, so that when this song came on in this movie and I am now living in California, like I started to just sob. And it just like, it's like one of those moments where you're like, does the future control the past sometimes a little bit? Like, does where we're headed, is it that much of a big thing that we can feel it in our bones early? I don't know. This made me think a lot of stuff.
We know where we're going, but we don't know where we've been.
Little Women, step aside. It's time for Little Monsters. Your jerker of the year.
Greta Gerwig presents.
Remake that no one's been waiting for.
There would definitely be an homage monster named Greta Earwig in it.
And a Bob Odenkirk jump scare.
Oh. Sure. Are y'all excited about Barbie? Anyone?
Yeah, so,
like, I'm stoked about it.
I think I just love that
Margot Robbie.
I think she's gonna fuck with this pretty good. I think we're going to get some really good stuff.
Oh, I'm so geeked.
Yeah.
Margot Robbie is like a big celebrity crush for me.
She's my favorite. She's kind of my favorite right now. I love her a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, for
sure. I like Trent Crim from Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
I think he's really sexy.
Good stuff happening. Good stuff happening this year with him.
That, by the way, the new ep just dropped.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'll get to it in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'll get to it never, probably. This season's not hitting it for me. I shouldn't say that on the podcast. We love Ted Lasso on this podcast.
Yeah.
I want to hear everybody's favorite song. I think we can all agree. Maybe not. I don't want to speak for everybody. I think the most powerful song is definitely Hell You Tom Bout. But I don't know about my favorite song, because that was like you said, Nat, like we all just sat there like in silence. So that one was powerful, but I want to hear your like favorite song. Like, what's the one that you connect to the most? What's the one you blast in your car? What's the one?
I'll start. It's Road to Nowhere. Like, always been one of my favorite Talking Head songs. And the way it's used in the show as the closer for the show, and that the audience is up, and that it keeps repeating that final part forever. It's fucking awesome. But but my favorite new song was Everybody's Coming to My House. It just touched me. It just like, it made me think and ponder. And it's interesting because I normally don't get songs like that at first. It takes me a while. Like, my hand to God, till I was 35 years old, I thought that fucking David Bowie was singing about leopard messiahs before I realized.
Well, he was.
Leopard messiah.
Yeah.
Leopard messiah. Because they need salvation too.
You're right.
The big cats need salvation
too. The big
too.
Ones, yeah.
They can't change their spots.
They can't, so they need salvation. But so I know. But that song, I got really quickly. It hit me very quickly. Who's next? Siege, what's your favorite song?
My favorite is I Should Watch TV. I love songs that rattle my guts, and that song does. I will turn it all the way the fuck up in my car and listen to it multiple times in a row. The tech in it is fucking great. The choreography is like borderline fascistic looking. Like yeah, I just oh,
yeah. And the lighting.
Yeah, oh, yeah it's yeah. It's just it's a hot and sexy song, and I love it.
Mm. Word.
Yeah. Or I don't know, Natalie.
Jay.
No. I would have to say. I mean, I already talked about Blind being really, really great. But another one is Lazy. I mean, Lazy is it's such a groove to me. Mm. Like sometimes I'll just go off on it and just start singing it. But I also did this. It makes me think of this performance I did about feeling like an imposter and like feeling like I'm not doing enough and not producing enough. And I was just putting on as many hats as possible. Yeah. To the song Lazy.
I know that, yeah.
There's just something that really speaks to me about it. And the music is really great, or the choreography is really great. And then Izimbra. I love the choreography on that one too.
Oh yeah.
That
yeah.
one gets me
in the Earth Sonata before the Rikitsitum. Rikitsitum. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I forget about him reciting that Dada poem. Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
What a nerd. Yeah. Talks about Dada poetry. Come on. What a fucking nerd. I love it.
It's amazing. I've already talked about Road to Nowhere. Me and you, Scott, we got that. The other thing I like is that like he's talking about the connection. He's talking about It's Us. And then in that final song, that is where they literally like break the proscenium and join the audience. And they become not audience and performers, but like one mass of people singing, which is like... The ultimate ending for that.
It's but spiritual. It's purely spiritual. Yeah.
One of the songs that I had never heard before that stuck with me was which is the one that how do you know like a wheel inside a wheel? What's that?
Oh, that one's in. That's in Stop Making Sense. Also.
From the bottom to the top.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it now.
It's the one where the backup singers come in for the first time and Stop Making Sense and wail their asses off.
Yeah, that is, I think, is that it?
No, it's Slippery People.
Slippery People.
Slippery People. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so like the first time I heard it for the next 3 days, I was like a wheel inside a wheel.
Yeah, that's a good one too. Dang.
Beige.
Bales, what about you?
I dance like this.
That's a good one.
I like Born Under Punches through Every Day is a Miracle, those four songs. It goes Born Under Punches, I Dance Like This, Bullet, Every Day is a Miracle. And then you get into Blind. Those are all new American, the last three are American Utopia songs that I really love.
Yeah. Bullet is so intense.
Yeah. Yeah. Good track. Is that everyone? Did everybody say?
Yeah, I mean,
talk about Spike Lee now.
Bailey's patiently been waiting to talk about Spike Lee.
I mean, because the Spike Lee of it all is kind of exciting because it's to me, and Claire, I mean, maybe somebody has more context for this that I don't understand. It felt so random to me that he was doing this.
No, it's passing strange, dude.
Is that why?
Yes, it is. Like, if you like the way this theater is shot, go watch yourself some Passing Strange because
Spike
Lee should be doing this.
Right.
He understands it. I've never seen, except for maybe like Demi, but like this is more theater, less concert.
Exactly. And that's why I think, I guess I didn't put that together. That's true. That's a good call. We should cover Passing Strange probably.
Yeah, we absolutely should.
Boogie.
Yes.
Okay.
I've met Stu.
You've met Stu? I've experienced a day
with Stu at Oregon Shakespeare Fest. Yeah.
That's so cool.
It was amazing. Crazy. And then the guy in the movie who plays young Stu is Donkey from the Shrek musical.
Right. Yeah. The one that with Brian Dusty James and Sutton. Yeah.
Save it.
But okay, I do want to hear, because you're right, so that's true, and we can dig into more about like what he does differently than maybe Demi and stuff, but I want to hear like do y'all like Spike Lee? Are you Spike Lee people? What are your favorite Spike Lee movies?
I'm a big
more recently I really loved Five Bloods. I've been trying to get people to get into that one because I think it was kind of overlooked
I haven't seen it. I'll watch it.
It's his most recent film.
Delroy Lindo was fucking robbed in the, from not getting straight a nomination for that. Absolutely amazing. Yeah, I remember going to see Do the Right Thing in the theater. That's how old
that's
I am.
That's probably my actual favorite. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for you youngins, like, it rattled people. People were rattled by that movie, that here comes this young upstart of a filmmaker, that he's black, that it's the late 80s, and he's going to get in your face and talk to you about racism in a really beautiful, fun, powerful way. Like, it's so visually fantastic. All the performances are great. And I fucking love Spike Lee, and I love that that was his, well, big break.
And this is what I meant to say at the beginning, is it felt out of nowhere for me at first. And then I started looking back through his stuff, and I was like, wait, no, of course. He was a music video dude first.
Yeah.
That was his whole gig, right? Yeah. So then it clocked for me, and I was like, okay, but I didn't even think of Passing Strange. Good call, Natalie. But yeah. I think it's kind of interesting that he's doing like tons of music videos. Then he does She's Gotta Have It. Is that his first major film?
She's Gotta Have It is the first one. Yeah.
And then School Days is probably a couple years after that. And then he does Do the Right Thing. And that same year, they drop The Public Enemy. Music video that he directs. What is the name of that song?
Welcome to
there
the
goes Tarradome. All your cred, Bailey.
It's gone.
Welcome to the Tarradome, right?
No, it's the one. I'll think of it someday. It doesn't matter.
Fight the Power.
Fight the power. That's
thank
it.
You.
You're,
I was
you
like, why it. Can't I think of the?
You mean Fight the Powers That Be?
Yes,
that one. Fight the Powers.
Okay,
that
okay,
be.
Okay.
Here, wait. I want to show you guys. I know this is a audio medium. I'll post a picture of it, but this is my one of my favorite Steelbooks.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
it's
yeah.
matte. You can't really tell, but yeah. the back is just love, hate on the.
Nice.
Like, there's yeah. a certain theatricality to that work too, isn't there? Like the
oh,
way,
very much,
sure.
very
like,
much.
The,
like
the town almost looks like a set, like a stage set.
It's sort of pre Wes Anderson kind of thing. I mean, he was also like using. There was that late 80s color scheme that was very African influence that he was able to use, and the Brooklyn street and having it be the hottest day of the year. So you have that blue sky.
And he does
like,
Mobetta Blues, which also has like a lot of that kind of coloring and things like that. You have
even She's Gotta Have It. That's a bunch of true. Monologues.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's more theatrical, and black and white. That.
And
then
you have
talking to the camera. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bamboozled, which is
Bamboozled
with
literally
so about.
Yeah,
you know, menstrual shows. And things like that. Yeah. So it all makes sense to me now. Like it's like once you look through his IMDb, you're like, oh, of course, this is perfect pairing. He and David Byrne should be making shit together all the time.
Well, plus, didn't Spike Lee direct one of Leguizamo's?
I was just gonna say that. I'm looking through his IMDb right now.
What did
he
do?
Directed Freak.
Freak. He directed Freak.
I didn't know that was Spike Lee.
He did that even
at Spike Lee, dude. Yeah.
You all should cover that.
That's a
Spike
Lee
joint. Spike Lee Day.
Well, we should absolutely do Freak. That would be
fucking
great.
No, we're
going to
do John Leguizamo.
We should do John Leguizamo.
I love John Leguizamo.
He has enough things now. We could cover it. He's
Latin History for Dummies is up on Netflix.
Yeah.
That's true. And he's got a bunch of other stuff, but to me it's like Freak is one of those things I watched in maybe high school or college that like blew my mind open in terms of what theater could be. I had never seen somebody do a one person show that wasn't a joke on a sitcom.
Right.
You know
right,
how the
right.
joke on sure. a sitcom is always like somebody and now I'm going to be my coach. Hey, get out here, Jimmy. And now I'm going to be my grandma. Hey, get out here, Jimmy. And it's that's the joke.
Things
right?
were pretty wacky
that.
When I was growing up.
Exactly. Talking to
that
your
makes me think
dog.
Of the Billy Crystal, Billy Crystal's 500 Sundays or whatever it is.
What is that?
It's like
his one person show that Brett Gelman makes fun of.
Yeah.
Which is like, And I loved baseball, the crack of the bat, the smell of, like, and no one better than the bat boy I knew. And then all the characters Billy Crystal would do, like, racially insensitive stereotype.
And then you have, like, now you have, like, Oh Hello, which is basically a two-person show making fun of what those shows are.
Yes.
Right? Exactly. But Freak Rules, that's, yeah, I didn't know that was Spike Lee. That's very
good. I have one problem with Freak. Why? And that is that the poster is scary. It's like, it's bright yellow and it's an intense version of his face. And that's all fine, except for they had that in the green room of my college theater. So when I'm trying to get calm before a show, I look up and it's bright yellow John Leguizamo face screaming at me. I would love to see the show to get rid of that connotation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did that poster freak you out?
Whoa. It did. I found myself a little bit.
You can leave now.
We're not going to have Jay and Natalie back.
Yeah, they're both.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
There's a really great video of David Byrne and Spike Lee talking about American Utopia after the fact, and it's so cute. They giggle together. They're laughing together. Just look at it. It's so cute. It's well shot, too. It's not like a shitty,
I'm glad that they're friends.
Yeah. They're buds.
I got excited that I saw, and I don't know if it was I don't know if it was another filmed concert situation or an album, but David Byrne also worked with fucking St. Vincent. Do you guys know St. Vincent?
Yeah, the band. Yeah, yeah.
He's cool as fuck.
Yeah,
we have Daddy's Home on vinyl.
I can't remember which song they did. They did a Talking Heads song with David Byrne, but he shows up. People pull him up on stage. Like, he just sort of, whoever calls him.
He was just
him
at the Oscars.
Yeah, it's like, you know, he shows up and does, like, he did, what's her name? Miley Cyrus. He sang a song with her. Like,
right on.
So random, you know?
I saw a TikTok of him doing karaoke, but I can't remember what song.
That's great.
We kind of brought this up earlier, but the last thing I kind of wanted to talk about is just the fact that, so I mentioned on the last episode about this, when we did Stop Making Sense, that when we watched American Utopia, I was kind of missing the energy of the backup singers of Stop Making Sense.
Sure.
But then I sort of realized, like, well, right, this isn't a concert anymore, right? This is more of a show. And what you two brought up, Jay and Natalie, I think specifically were the ones that kind of pointed this out on the day when we were watching it. And maybe, I mean, everybody was engaging in this, but I just remember you specifically sort of pointing out, like, each one of these people is a character who has their own arc and has their own story throughout this, basically. And if you track one of them through the whole thing, you would see, like, a full through line. And I was like, oh, shit, you're right. And that's definitely true of this. And I think that's why it doesn't need the energy of, quote unquote, backup singers, right? It needs characters to inhabit the space and tell the story. That's
sure.
what it is. Yeah.
And they were all like a traveling band. You know what I mean? Like they, like they were all like not really like plugged in, right? Like they were all kind of.
Everything was wireless. Yeah.
Everything was wireless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, also that makes me think of the fact that like all of them are individual. Like they all are very clearly an individual person. They're very unique. They have idiosyncrasies. You can pick them out in a crowd, but they are all connected in this performance piece. So it's just a celebration of all of these unique people in these lines and these paths. And I think that that's what an American Utopia is. Yeah. It's a celebration of individuality and a want for connection.
Mm-hmm. So matching uniforms, all the utopias have them,
and barefoot.
Listen, then you don't have to think about what you're wearing every day.
Right.
Humoring onesie.
Listen.
Yeah.
I unfortunately have to get to a rehearsal soon, so can everybody give their sort of final word and then we'll get out of here?
Sure.
And we'll have you back. We'll do Passing Strange with y'all. We'll do, you know, we'll make it
that's happen. Yeah, let's do that.
Oh, I can't wait to watch that with y'all.
Me neither.
Just thanks again, y'all, for having me over to watch both of these films. Like I said, like, these guys have introduced me to some shit that I'm like, well, I am never going to fucking watch that again, Jodorowsky. But, like, that night was
Don't
so
say
great.
You guys and then say Jodorowsky. I did not ever suggest that.
You loved it. You loved every minute of it because you should
I'll never forget it. I'll never forget it. But also never forget this night either. And it's now solidly made me a Talking Heads and David Byrne fan. So, and I've been telling everybody about it. So thank you.
Yeah, I was just going to say it was just a wonderful experience watching it and sharing it with all of you. And it's just, I kind of marked, like, it's interesting how the Talking Heads have kind of always been in my consciousness in a pop culture sense. But I never would have said until probably a decade ago that I was, a super Talking Heads fan, but I am, and a David Byrne fan too. I need to get more into his solo stuff, but yeah, that's all I got.
I will just say that, I love watching and talking about art with you all.
Yeah.
I mean, I said a lot already, about how, this particular show affects me, but this will just be towards everybody here. You help me become a better artist because I get to talk about it. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's so sweet. Yeah. You know, this was already a really special experience for me the first time I saw it, and now every time I watch it, I'm gonna think about y'all. You guys are now part of. Of this memory for me, so that's gonna make it even more special.
Yeah,
you all are my American utopia.
The American utopia is the friends we made along the way.
Exactly. Okay. Well, is that? I'm gonna miss you guys. Are we out of here? Is this it?
Yeah, I think we're done. Yeah.
Up to you. Yeah.
I got a spotlight if we wanna do that.
Let's spotlight some Los Angeles theater.
Yes.
LA Spotlight.
The show, The Bottoming Process. It's just been recommended by Stage Raw. It's IAMA working with the LA LGBT Center. It's at the Renberg Theater, which is the larger space.
Starring George Salazar of Be More Chill fame. Tim Kopax, who is a friend of the pod,
Tim was in it. Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, he goes up the June 2nd, 3rd, or something.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Dates, they go through the 12th of June. You can look them up at IAMATheaterRE.com or at IAMATheater, and we'll have the info for you.
Nice. Yeah. Scott.
I'm just going to do a big shout out to the Hollywood Fringe. Go to the Hollywood Fringe website. We have three shows amongst the five of us going on. Yeah. There we have Raise Your Hand from the Dead. We have If I'm Good. And Bailey, what's the cabaret called?
School for Love.
School for Love.
At three clubs.
With Pam.
With Pam.
With Pam. Friend of the pod.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mother of the pod.
Mother, yeah, yes.
We'll start covering more
pod mother
stuff next week. Pod mother.
Harry Pod mother.
Yeah.
Night Podther. Cast Podther.
Cast Podther.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
That's all any of us got. We're out of gas.
CLA, July 14th and 15th. There is evil in this house at the Zephyr. Keep an eye out. There will be some sort of a Kickstarter-y fundraising thing that will be signal boosting soon.
Sweet.
Yup. Jay, you got anything?
You can find me on the social meds at Soft J, SoftJay. Posting increasingly risque photos on my Instagram for free. So
yes.
Yeah.
You know, check it out there. And occasionally I'll tweet about Disney Dreamlight Valley. So
get on board for that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For as long as Twitter still survives, I'll be dreamlighting.
Thank you for joining us for Theater. Scott's pick. This has been American Utopia and technically part two of our David Byrne miniseries.
Yeah, let's call it part since two.
He wrote the script, technically. Yeah. He's a playwright in some way. Yeah, that's all I got. We'll see what next time is. What's next time?
Fringe? Are we doing Fringe stuff
yeah,
next?
I think we're just
or are we at
on
Martin
Fringe.
McDonagh yet?
Yeah.
No, I think we're doing Fringe stuff and we're putting Martin McDonagh throughout. Oh, we should announce this here. We got a guest for the pod that I'm really excited about.
Oh, yeah.
After Martin McDonagh, we're covering a playwright, a native playwright who has a play coming to the Mark Taper Forum and has a play on Broadway right now called Thanksgiving Play. Larissa Fasthorse is going to be on the podcast.
Amazing.
On
yes.
The podcast. Yeah. It's a big get.
Maddox Pennington will be interviewing. I'll be producing, and we're just gonna sort of make it a really nice packaged deal that to go along with our miniseries. So, look out for that.
Awesome!
Incredible. Fantastic!
Yeah.
Do y'all have questions or comments? You can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott.
Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who writes our theme song. Our theme song is better than your fucking theme song.
It's true,
bitch.
He's also writes all of our stingers. He's an amazing human being. Finally, to the great award-winning playwright Carol Churchill, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, Carol Churchill, we're gonna buy you a beer. Stop shaking your head, CJ. Stop.
Poor Carol Churchill.
She loves
it. She didn't ask for this.
Yeah, maybe.
You're all my top girls. I appreciate you. And I'm... Subscribe, rate, and review. I love you. I have to go.
Yes.
Let's get out of here, okay? Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Love you.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Natalie. You're both incredible.
This was so fun.
Love being here. Thank you.
Love you all. Bye.
And one fine night, I'll be holding on tight to a cool rider, a cool rider. If he's cool enough, he can burn me through and through. Whoa, if it takes forever, I kinda think takes forever. No ordinary boy, no ordinary boy is gonna do. I want a rider that's cool.
I thought you said you had to go.
Well,
he just wanted everyone to shut up.
No. Say it, Scott.
Had to go.
My mentee went, oh, I had a really good time with you the other night. I really like talking to that guy that wouldn't stop talking about the Fast and the Furious movies.
Scott.
Later, everybody.
It. Thank you.
The theater, the theater. Theater. To be or not to be. Theater. Theater. The play's the thing.
Okay, you guys ready?
Yes.
Let's rock.
I forgot we were already recording. So whenever you feel like you're ready...
I'm loving this dialect.
Wow.
You know,
Roy.
Heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
It never gets old.
I think about death every day.
Because
Reese, you ever think about dying? I think about dying every day.
You
just watch a little Reese Witherspoon's face, just like, what? I hope that's true.
Nicole Kidman and Carol Churchill need to hang out.
They do.
Nicole Kidman speaks like this.
Nicole Kidman and Carol Churchill are real big.
That's
on the,
knife.
The underground, underground knife. Arm wrestling circuit.
You call that existential dread?
I'm really glad we're recording right now.
Yeah, I'm putting this at the end.